And now we're going to hear the other part of the story. We may go a little over, so bear with us.
It's fine. It's all right, guys.
Go ahead.
All right, Jonathan, I'm an alcoholic.
Hi, Jonathan.
I knew at least like 6 people were going to be here. You know? I was going to say that we were going to be earlier, but we stopped for a drink, but it's probably not the funniest thing to say. Jonathan, I'm an alcoholic, and I'm grateful to be sober and grateful to be in Immune Alcoholics Anonymous. I've shared from the podium before, but not in Alcoholics Anonymous, so it's an honor because I felt like I was hiding in the other program because somebody touched my ego and I just never went back because the lack of understanding of recovery. I came in to, well, I guess I could give a little backstory. I'm from Los Angeles, California, born in Linwood, California, to drug and alcoholic parents. My mom was, you know, running from her past, and so we moved out here when I was like 12 months, and I've been in Santa Maria, California primarily since. I have like 9 brothers and sisters. Wasn't really raised with majority of them. My oldest brother, I went to jail when I was like 5 years old. He did 26 years in prison. And I share that because at that time when he went to jail, like I was alone at that point. Like I had an older sister, but you know, when it came to like my companionship, like he was gone. And so I equate that to that lonely feeling inside, and I equate that to trying to find things to like grab my attention. And my first little thing was fire. I had this little thing with fire, and I would play with like fire, and I burned this shed down, and one of the police, Santa Maria fire chief, said he yelled at me, and I think he said like fuck or something, and I didn't pick up no fire then, but I started smoking cigarettes at like 5-6 years old, and that was like my first, like I started chasing that like from an early age. I've been smoke weed from the age of 9 years old. My first drink, like, you know, when they say their first drink was like 6 at like a family party or something, I picked up a champagne glass and drank it. I don't know if that's the night I shaved my eyebrow off when I was younger. I shaved my eyebrow off in the bathroom. But it might've been the same night, might or not, but, and so, I just always felt different, especially in Santa Maria, California, because like, I'm black, you know, and my mom always tried to keep me in like good schools, so it was like always orchid schools, mm-hmm. and everybody like made fun of me, or you know, they say the N-word every once in a while, and stuff like that, and so it was like 3 or 4 black kids at the school, but I just kind of always did my own thing, especially when I started smoking weed. I bought some weed to school one time, thinking I was cool, and somebody told on me. But, you know, fast forward, my first drunk was at the age of 14. And the reason I didn't like alcohol, when I was young, I didn't like alcohol because my dad is an alcoholic, and my mom always made sure to tell me that. And that at one point, I doubted the fact that he loved me or whatever. And so I didn't like alcohol. You know, I smoke weed and you know, whatever. But at 14, I got drunk with some friends during summer school, and I was supposed to go home, and I fell asleep drunk on my friend's hood. And my mom, you know, like, I thought I was gonna get in trouble because she's so controlling and like lightweight abusive. So when I got home drunk with my friend, she wasn't mad. Like she was like drinking herself and she wasn't mad. Like, and I ended up throwing up, and so it was cool. Like I've been doing my own thing since like 16, and she was like kind of gave up. Like, so after that, she kind of started giving up on like what I was doing. Like I was already smoking weed. Like I was raised around drug dealers and things like that. And so, and then I started taking like a bottle of vodka to school, and just trying to be cool, just trying to fit in. And then I end up getting sent to my dad's when I was 16. And my mom, on the one hand, like, lived her life and was doing, you know, she does drugs, and, you know, and so going to my dad's, he wanted to build some type of structure, discipline, and he's alcoholic, and he has it, but he wanted to make sure that, you know, his son wasn't smoking cigarettes or smoking weed and doing good in school, and, you know, understand that you work every, you know, man don't work, man don't eat kind of thing. And man, I just wasn't with that. You know, I wanted to do what I wanted to do. So I was lying to him about me playing football. I was smoking weed before school, buying cigarettes, and, you know, everything that he despised. But the funny part is what he always would say is that, like, you can do whatever you want when you get 18. Like, you can piss your asshole if you want to. And so I was 16 at that time, and I was like, I spent like a semester with him, and I left. Went back to my mom's, you know, claim homesickness kind of thing. And but this was the kicker. I found this acceptance within that time of like who I was, because I was going to school and everybody like sagged their pants and everybody walked with a wobble and everybody had big lips. And so my cousins, like, they had this like kind of swag about themselves, wearing their pants up and white t-shirts and Nikes. And so I came back with that, and with some type of self-knowledge, I would say, but on top of that, a facade, because I still was this insecure little dude. And that's when I first put my mask on, like really put a mask on and got to be somebody I wasn't. And shortly after that, I got in trouble and went to juvenile hall. And this was my first spiritual experience, where I wasn't smoking cigarettes, I wasn't smoking weed, I wasn't doing anything like that for, I think, 9 months, and I was on my medication and went to this chapel thing. And the guy asked me, rest in peace, Doug Murch, asked me to pray over the group. And I'm like, you know, before I talk very soft and timid, and I start praying, and then I got this voice about myself, like really strong. And I noticed it, and it was just like aura that came on me. And from that point, like, I had a dream in my life to give back to kids that came from, you know, drug, you know, trouble homes, as they would say, being a troubled youth. And I had this dream, you know, and I got to like put it on in camp. So like for a short moment, like, this dream was a reality in this boys' camp. So I came home, and like I said, I was raised around drug dealers. And so at the age of 12, I remember asking this dude, and man, I want to be like you. You see what I'm saying? And he was like, what? You gotta be like 16. And so when I got out of camp, I was like 17. But I had this future in front of me. I just graduated high school, had this dream, had like, you know, opportunity to go to Hancock for free. And so I hit the ground like running. But at the same time, my mom was in the hotel, got kicked out of her place and was in the motel. I started drinking a little bit, and was trying to go to school, but I couldn't. And so, and then I found out, you know, I found out my mom did drugs. And I kind of had this like flashback, like my life, my past like flash in front of me of like, the house always being dark, or why she never really wanted to like chill with me like that, and why all these people, these drug dealers, was like brothers, and these older women and older men were like uncles and aunts that weren't part of my family. They, you know, I equated to that they were smokers, and it really did something to me, because she wanted to have so much control over me. And then, like, I had started, like, selling drugs, so I had found this vision for them and disrespect and like, they're smokers. And then when I found out that my mom was, it was hard to, like, look at my mom as a smoker, because I did care for my mom, and I'm a mama's boy, whatever. And so that, like, I lost control of reality at that point, and I just wanted to, I didn't want to have to deal with it. And so I started drinking, trying to sell drugs. I'm not really good at it. I wish I was, because I might have some money, you know. But after that, like, I just was lost. I didn't know who I was, nor what I was. And my mom, I said, like I said, she's controlling. And I remember trying to make something of myself and wanting to be like my mom. What I thought of my mom, an independent woman, like, got her own place, handled her own things. And then, like, she rejected me when I told the therapist and her that. And I just couldn't understand. And so I went with my dad. And I was at that time, I was 19. So at the age of, like I said, 18, like, I can do whatever I want. So I was able to, like, chill with my dad, drink with my dad, smoke cigarettes with my dad. Like, I was good. And he works every day. And so I had this, you know, like, job. And but when I get drunk, I don't want to function. Like, I don't want to do much. You know, I get drunk. And so me wanting a relationship with him and me drinking, like, just started to push him away because I wasn't a hard worker like him. And then my brother got out of jail after doing 16 years of prison. And now, you know, things are supposed to be great. Like, I've waited my whole life for this. And my drinking was pushing him away. Like, who I was and the lack of knowledge of that person, like, was pushing him away. And my brother was the first person that challenged me with the idea of, like, stop drinking, bro. Like, you need to just stop drinking. You can't drink. We get into fights and, like, brawls and stuff with our girlfriends and all type. And so, and that was the first time I realized, like, I didn't have control because I did it for, like, a day. And I came home from work and he pissed me off and I ran straight to the liquor store. I'm not a good timekeeper, so if you can just shut me down. So, again, I had this dream to open up this youth program that was, like, in my mind, that was able to. If I finished school by the age of 22, I could have a youth program. And I moved out there when I was 19, and every year that passed, just it felt like that spiritual sickness grew more and more. And every 3 months, like, my family, my dad's side of the family was, like, big on church. My uncle was an assistant pastor. They service in the church. And so every 3 months, like, I would go to church and tarry and cry out and then, like, leave. And in L.A., there's a liquor store on every corner. So, like, leave and hit the liquor store and then boom. And it just grew. And I was relationship after relationship. And I got into this major car accident in 2005 where I just wanted to inflict pain on myself. Like, I had already visualized, like, speed and going 100 miles per hour and running into a wall, right. And so, like, I blacked out one night and I woke up angry at my dad, angry at my girlfriend, and I jumped in the car and I just sped down the street and got into a car accident. And when I was in that, like I told you, I put a mask on and when I came back to Santa Maria at 16 and when I moved back to my dad's at 19, there's gangs, there's all this other stuff. So I can't go as this person I created. I had to go as Jonathan, which Jonathan didn't really know who he was. And I soon found out that he was an alcoholic like his dad. And so after the car accident, I moved back down for a little while and put the mask back on. My drinking increased. I ended up moving back to LA briefly and getting to my own place and with a girl that I got into the accident because, and I only had the place for 3 months due to alcohol. Like, it was funny, my cousin gave me like all this furniture and he gave me a bar, like kind of like fully stocked bar. And it didn't even make it through the first night and I smashed it all on the ground. I was going to jail like once a week for like drunk in public or domestic disturbance, and it was like five times in 3 months. And I moved back down to Santa Maria because I just was lost. And so fast forward, I put the mask back on, start trying to sell drugs again to keep a couple dollars in my pocket because I don't have no work ethic other than what I just experienced with my dad. And I get pulled over by Lompoc Police Department. They give me a possession charge. And unbeknownst to me, like, it's a 11 550 or whatever, and so they gave me Prop 36, which brought me into a recovery program. In this recovery program, two women really helped. Rest in peace, Eileen. I don't remember her last name, but she was heavily in like the Good Sam recovery, and she was like helping me understand that like I'm not my mom's boyfriend, so I don't need to jump at her every whim and answer her call, because she'll call me like back to back, just blowing me up, and I didn't have to be there for everybody, because like I almost went to jail just for not showing up to my class on Fridays, and so I tried to give the program a shot, I had to come to these programs, and my outside friends was like, oh, you can just sign your own court card. A big part of my story is that I signed my own court card and I turned it in, and then with my spiritual process working already, like I was honest that I had signed it. And when she turned it into court, I went to court and the judge said, you know, falsifying court documents and you're gonna be reprimanded. Mm-hmm. And I don't do jail. My brother, you know, did enough jail time for me, I feel like, and he never wanted that for me. So I've only done like 8 days in a row, but it's like the worst time of my life. Fast forward 2016, I came into the rooms of recovery. After I went to jail, like I laid on my bunk, and I cried out to God. And again, he came into my life, and I start doing this thing one day at a time. I start hearing, keep coming back. One thing you gotta change is everything. I'm glad I know different now, but keep it simple, stupid, but it's keep it spiritually simple, which that's something I follow today, because it doesn't have to be difficult. And I just start coming. I knew that you get loaded every day, you go to a meeting every day, so I knew that when I stayed on this course that things was going to change. And my first spiritual awakening recovery was, I had 6 months, and it was Thanksgiving, and I went to my old friend's house, not old friends, but like my friend's house, and they smoking and drinking and selling drugs, and I was just like drinking Coke and Coke, and like I drank like 4 or 5 Cokes in like 30 minutes. And so I ran to a meeting, and I took my 6 month chip, and I felt a feeling of blissfulness and safety, and just like felt like I knew who I was in that moment. And so fast forward, I got like 4.5 years completely sober, 5 years without a drink, and so I did meet my wife and we got married, and within a year of my recovery, and you're not supposed to, it's suggested that you don't do that because you're introduced to your character defects. And I've never been into a faithful relationship for more than a year, and so with all the pressure of like had a family and a child, and me just knowing that if I go to these meetings that everything will be okay, like we started to like back up, and I had a conversation with an atheist in a meeting one time, and I put the program into it to where he didn't have to feel left out, but for some reason it didn't feel right with me, that I had to like shy away from my higher power to talk to this atheist. And then so at that point I had stopped going participating in recovery. Ultimately I got loaded. I came back and got a year. And then I left my family. I had been, I guess, left my family and did what I want to do. And I was in this little situation, and I was afraid because now I was vulnerable. And so I had a drink, and that set off the allergy. And I just was gone. I was gone for like 3 years. I had two straight months I didn't see my children. I had just like birthed my second child, birth my second child, let alone was there for my first child. Like recovery and my children at that time was like everything that I had. Like I didn't know any other anything else. I didn't even know how to truly love Kelsey, and because I was still learning how to be loved and how to love in this program. And so I was got back, you know, trying to see my kids on a daily basis, and she had mentioned, I seen her like rolling this, we went to dinner and I seen her rolling this napkin, and she was like, oh, a blunt would be good right now. And my alcoholism held on to that. And I went to sober living, was in sober living for 3 months. And so we got back together. I was like, hey, you know, or right before we got back together, I was in, so I was like, so if I smoke weed, like, you're not gonna leave me? And she was like, no. And I was like, if I drink, you're not gonna leave me? You know, and she was like, no. I was like, all right, cool. Setting up for the fact that one day I'm gonna tell her, you know, let's smoke. And I did that. And there was a lot of resentment held up and within that breakup, that divorce and things. And all of it came out. One thing I learned before was like a gratitude list and journaling. And my life was going really good when I did that, and I felt really good. But then when I got over here, and I have a journal where you can see it just stop, and it gets bad, and then the separation again. And I had my son was on the way, and I pushed him away. And so there was something I really, like, I did want to touch on the book, because around this time, I had met my new sponsor, and I came back into the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me. When I didn't have anywhere to go, Alcoholics Anonymous was there for me, sheltered and comforted me, and helped me understand that when it's just me and my higher power, like, I gotta be able to trust my higher power. And I was faced with that, and it didn't stand. And I seen that I drank, so that meant I didn't trust my higher power. And when it came down to being there for my family and being there for my children, and faced with moving halfway across the country, and I drank again and start to like chip at my savings, I knew that if I didn't surrender, I wasn't gonna be able to be there for them. And I went to a meeting one day, and I was supposed to meet up with this guy from Alcoholics Anonymous, and I drank all day. I stumbled into a meeting drunk and was ashamed of myself. And my higher power spoke to me in that moment. And whatever I said in that meeting, I haven't had a drink since October 3rd in 2023. And what really got me through to this point right here is asking to be relieved of the bondage itself, so I may better do thy will. You know, remove my difficult. It's not verbatim. Don't scorn me. But relieve me of the bondage itself, so I may better do thy will. Help remove the difficulties from. So I may bear witness to those of thy love, thy strength, and thy power, something like that. It's in here, but I, and so step three really helped me understand. And something that I was going through was that it talks about it in the Emotional Sobriety 2, number 2. Bill's story, he talks about like removing all your dependencies. And so at that time, like, I was like depending on people to get me to work and get me from work and for money and extra little things. And I let go of that, and I start depending on my higher power and riding my bike to work along the coast of the Highway 1, which is a very spiritual experience. I just always been protected. Especially since that time I turned my will over. The difficulties were removed. Like, I had a place and a job, and then, you know, forms of transportation when I didn't know anybody in Florida, when I didn't have anything. And my high power allowed me to see his presence in my life, as long as I didn't pick up a drink, no matter what. God's will for my life was not to drink, and my will for my life was to drink, and I just followed that for a long time, and until God really showed something else. And today, God's will for my life is to be there for my family, and not to leave no matter what. And though it's, you know, I don't know, but I'd be ready to cut and run. And I only say that because life is hard, and or can be difficult, and I don't want to leave this out, because my character defects imprint on people's lives and affect their lives. And so, you know, since I was not drinking but acting out on character defects, you know, another little girl, her name is Ciamara, and she's like 9 months right now. I never met her. And I thank God, because that, in a series of events, that allowed me to know what was important. Not shacking up with somebody that, you know, whatever, but chasing the thing that God had given me. And it talked about like being a mental defect, and outright mental defect, full flight from reality. Maladjusted to life. And you know, like, that's me. Like, and that's one of those reasons that I stayed in Alcoholics Anonymous, because I start to see me in this book. Like, you know, the other program, they say like alcohol is a drug, period. Okay, cool. But this is me, and it's given me the strength to carry the message and in the way that I walk. And he does relieve my difficulties, because today I stand here and my family is together, and I get to see and practice tolerance and love and patience, and spiritually work these steps in my life on a daily basis, because I'm powerless over people, places, and things. I have to come to believe that a power greater than myself can restore me to sanity at each level of my life. I make that decision to turn my will and my life over to care of God, as I understand Him, on a daily basis. We're still at the turning point, and I stand at the turning point every day. And especially me, like, I really do. And because it comes to the point where this thing gets loud and be like, fuck everything. Fuck everything and run is like really like what happens. But today I face everything and rise one day at a time. I do communicate to my sponsor when it comes to this moral inventory and these things that I've done, that I do. And I don't want to be like this, because that person doesn't allow love to be in his life, doesn't allow people to like be in my life. And so I humbly ask for these things to be changed on a daily basis. Moment by moment basis, with my job, with things, because I just, you know, doubt myself so much. But my higher power has a plan for me. And somebody showed me that how spiritual this program is. I seen this dude from my past that I assaulted with the shovel, and I was walking out of my job, and he was in the drive-thru, and face-to-face, like, not face-to-face, but eye-to-eye, and, like, fear overcame me. And I went back in there. I didn't, like, lash out, nothing, but the fact of seeing him, and I was doing something different, like, I was a different person, was the living amends that happens in step 9. And, like, step 10, I have a really hard time, but I do, and she probably gets tired of it, because I'll wake up the next day and apologize, or come a little bit later and be like, look, I was wrong. And it's hard, because it's sometimes repetitive. That's right.
It's a good step.
it feels to me like it gets repetitive, and just like people, you know, somebody that was in my life like stepped away from me because I wasn't growing, and I don't fault them for that. But I've always felt unloved, and I've always felt like people will do that, and so I don't want my kids to get tired of me. And so I do my best to pray and meditate. Like my prayers are simple. Like I said, relieve me of the bondage self, so I may better do thy will. God, thank you for keeping me sober today. Keep me sober today. And I haven't had a spiritual awakening as a result of this program, as a result of working these steps. We try to practice principles in all our affairs and carry the message to the still suffering alcoholic. Like, I do my best to do that. Hey, my man, just really hold on, man, because your family and that opportunity to have a level of freedom in your life with your children, man, waking up next to them, bro, I didn't think that I was going to get that opportunity. And today I have that opportunity, and I get to hug and I kiss them, and they open the door, man, and they get excited. Like, don't give up no matter what, bro. Like, all you have to do is not drink one day at a time, one moment at a time. And depend on this program. Like, when I slide into a meeting, I'm safe. And so, and you got to pick up that phone, because there's no meeting, pick up the phone. But guess what? One day you're going to have to depend on that power greater than yourself and stay focused. Because, you know, it's not easy when you do this, but it's worthwhile. And I stand here and I say all these little negative things about myself, but I know that I stand here in confidence as a man and recovering alcoholic, and that it's possible. And you were doing it, and you are doing it. Don't tap out on yourself, because, not to say that you owe people, but I owe people. I owe people the best me that I can give them. And that's what creates their brighter day, when I take one step towards that person. And so if you ever need anything, man, you call me. Because I don't do this program perfect. I don't even, like, know this book perfect. But what I do know is recovery, and I participate in it. And whatever it takes, you just hold on, because guess what? You might not be here after that next drink. I almost killed this lady and this other lady driving this big 1500 Dodge Ram truck. And I didn't go to jail. No DUI. I don't have any DUIs. God is present in my life, but I could have. And this next time, there might not be a next time of coming back. So just try not to take this opportunity that you have to have your kids in your life, have your sanity for granted. Because I see it every day. I try to use that as the best example for my children to give them something to look at of why I do this. Because I don't want to be I sleep on streets. I've slept in shacks. I've been homeless. I've lived in a homeless shelter. Like, I've used the bathroom on myself trying to go see my kids. Like, I have went through these hardships one step at a time, and it's all been worth it, because Alcoholics Anonymous says that I'm worth it. And so if you got anything out of that, cool. Thank you for letting me all share.
All right. Thank you, Alvin. Very inspirational. Thank you for your honesty. Another round for the two of them. Yeah.